When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
This holiday, deck their countertops with peppermint white chocolate mochas, gingerbread lattes, and pumpkin cream cold brews. Ninja Lux Cafe is the ultimate gift. It's the number one best-selling espresso machine in the U.S., perfect for the coffee lovers in your life. If they can dream it, they can brew it. No skills needed. Espresso balanced. Drip coffee rich. Cold brew in a flash. Hands-free silky microfoam. Dairy or plant-based milks. Bring joy into their holiday and every day after with Ninja Lux Cafe. Shop now.
Hello out there, and welcome to the Danny
and Rihanna Show. This is Danny Pena, Rihanna's husband.
And this is Rihanna Manuel Pena, Danny's wife. And today we had a really cool presentation that we watched. Danny recorded on his own channels his reaction to the Xbox partner preview. And it really quickly inspired us to talk about these digital shows and maybe give a little bit of behind the scenes as to what they are, how they come together, and why companies keep doing them. You know, Danny, I think you would probably have a really good point of view on the history of these digital showcases as you have seen the evolution of in-person events. You've been to many E3s where, you know, the roots of these were really born, and Nintendo was kind of like the pioneer in this space, right?
Yeah, Nintendo actually was the first company to actually do this. This was during the Wii U era. I remember Nintendo invited us to a to go to E3 early and just be at their booth right after the presentation of the Nintendo Direct. So I remember at that time when we got to see this for the first time, you know, and it was an announcement that Nintendo was not going to have a press conference during E3. We were like, this is not good. What is this? The
like
end of
huge,
Nintendo?
Right? Controversial, really.
Yeah, very, very controversial back
then.
It
was through the industry.
That was very, very new. And people were like saying, does this make sense? Is it because they don't have a lot of games announcements? Like, what is going on? Like, so at that time, it was new to us, right? So fast forward, you know, a couple of years later, now you see more companies are doing it too. You know, not having the in-person events. They would just have recorded videos where people would just watch it. They'll edit this in-house. And it's basically cheaper for the company to do this. So I personally miss the getting together with people and watching press conferences live. Because, you know, back when I used to go to E3, it was live press conferences where people go on stage and have conversation, you know, and announcements and demos and all that stuff.
There's
right?
a lot of really great memes and famous moments from those yep. presentations. Yeah.
Yeah. And also mistakes.
My body is ready.
Yeah. But also mistakes too, where, you know, I remember mm-hmm. Miyamoto was on stage demoing, I think it was Zelda. Oh my God. What's it? Zelda for the Wii U. I can't remember the name of the game. Anyways, was it the, yes, it was for the Wii. It was for the Wii. And he tried to demo it. And remember, at that time, a lot of companies would do live demos, not pre-recorded demos.
Very brave.
Yep. And he's there, and he's like going like this with the Wii controller, moving it, and the character wasn't moving at all. Like, Link was just there standing. And I'm like, ooh, that's not good. You know, I seen that with also with Xbox, you know, promoting connect, and they'll show like a demo, and the demo's not working. The characters is like, oh, weird, and you know. So there was a lot of mistakes. So companies started doing just recorded stuff, you know, on stage, and then now we have directs like Nintendo Direct, State of Play, and Xbox Partner Program, and so on. So that has been better to send the message, you know, to the industry, to the community about the products that's coming, games that's coming up in the future, and it's been great, you know. So that's the good side, but I think the bad side for me is I just miss the in-person, everybody's watching it together, you know, like Xbox Fan Fest, like that type of thing. You sit down and watch the pre-recorded presentation. I miss hearing those reactions of the gamers, like, oh my God. Because, you know, yeah, you watch it at home, but you're not really listening to what other people are saying. You have to go to social media and read the people's reaction. You know, it's not the same, you know. But there's a good, but also there's a bad, too, in my opinion, you know. But that's yeah, the brief history about all this. Yeah.
Yeah, and you bring up a really good point, because it's a lot of the arguments you hear in favor of keeping movie theaters around, right, is that in-person experience, but also shared with strangers. And it's one of those things that comes with sort of like a double side, or two. It's kind of like there's two sides to it, because on the one hand, having things digitally presented makes them so much more accessible to so many more people. And there's lots of creators who can't always get to the event in person, or, you know, don't have the ability to listen live. Maybe they need ASL resources or additional accessibility services in order to consume it in the same way. And all of that is very valid, and we all benefit from more people having access to it. But as you said, it doesn't compare to feeling the energy and the reaction of people in a room responding to what they're seeing on screen and getting excited about something or getting really bummed out about the price of something. You know, like we've seen all of these really memorable moments. And for a lot of people who have covered games through that era of live presentations, something has been lost. Truthfully, it
yes and no, yes and no. And I also feel like the community could do meetups locally and start doing
yes
those things,
and we've
right?
seen a lot of really fun examples of that, especially around reality TV. I know I've seen a lot of that in Love Island season 7 for USA, and we've also seen some recaps of some Squid Game experience reality show being shown live. And there's this new phenomenon called reality bars that are popping up all over the world, but definitely several in LA, to which I've been to some of them, and really cool experience, like watching this, you know, unscripted television, which is sort of similar, and reacting to it with a room full of friends and strangers, which is a lot like what those presentations used to feel like.
Yeah, I love that. And I know there's also videos of where people will get together and they'll go to the Nintendo store in New York City. I know there's a new store in San Francisco. I haven't seen videos on that. But I know the one in New York, a lot of Nintendo fans will get together and will watch the direct. Everybody there, and everybody's like, their reaction is wild, you know, when they show like a new Mario game or whatever, you know, they'll go crazy. But there's people that will record that and they'll post that online so that people can hear the gamer's reaction when there's like a new announcement and stuff like that, you know. And this is,
and you put that
thing
right next to like a Big Brother reaction, a Big Brother elimination yeah. reaction from a bar. Yeah. They're same excitement. Like people yeah. love sharing this with each other. Same for live sports. Like all of these things have a very similar effect for people.
Yeah. And it's also, I know Jeff Keighley had this a couple of years ago where he had, was it the Game Awards or was it Summer Game Fest?
I think it was Summer Game Fest.
Yeah, they had it in theaters across the country. I think around the world, but I think it was more across the country. And you could go to the theater and watch it live, you know. And that's something that I think is cool, where people could just go together and meet up locally. And because not everybody's going to go to like a Summer Game Fest, you know, fly right. across the country and go to Los Angeles. But if there's something where there's a place where people could get together and watch it together and, you know, and react, all that at the same time, I think it's really cool. It reminds me of like I will never forget this experience watching the Avengers Endgame at the theater. Like that was like the moment I was like, yo, I have never experienced something like this in my life. Like this, it felt like an event, right? So it's also similar to, you know, like I miss those days of going to a store at midnight when a game is coming out and you meet other gamers locally that's part of your community too, and everybody's like exchanging gamer tags or PSN ID, you know, just so they could play online together in the future.
Yeah.
But now people just download games from home. They don't need to go to, you know, to the store at midnight. And I'm telling you, like, yes, there's good things, but also there's bad things where, like, I miss those days, you know, I miss those yeah. moments, you know? So.
Well, we are starting to see a little bit of that nostalgia coming back. Like, you have examples like we have already talked about with the reality bars, or, you know, obviously live sports have always been a thing. But even something like Netflix sending K-pop Demon Hunters to theaters after it premiered on streaming, right? And, you know, there's a possibility in the future we see these gaming presentations partnering with AMCs or Regals or what have you, so that people can enjoy it live with other people and talk about it all together, having watched it in a series of rooms with one another. So, you know, we never know what the future holds, and the pendulum always swings back and forth, and, you know, physical media and in-person events and all of these things will definitely always have a place. The question is, how prevalent is it? Right? And like, how often do you get to engage with it? But who knows? Maybe a game in the future will have a midnight release party and have it go out on Tuesday night like we used to, and everybody can line up and have that nostalgic feeling because it's fun and there's something really special about it. And I hope it's not lost, right? Like, maybe it's not every game, but maybe sometimes it can be a fun little activation. Hey, if anybody wants to set that up, like, Hit us up. We'd love to run a marketing campaign yeah. for you.
But I tell you this, I think the game that is going to be a cultural moment for next year is when the new Grand Theft Auto comes out.
Oh, for sure.
Next year.
Yeah.
That is going to get a lot of people like hype, go to the stores, you know, and meet other gamers, and people are going to be excited. And that's the hardcore fans and also the people that just play Grand Theft Auto and that's it. You know, yeah. like they're very casual gamers. Everybody's going to go there. It's going to be a cultural moment. I think once that happens next year, that's going to be wild. That's going to be intense when that happens, man. And we will see those moments also when a new hardware comes out. You know, I know that we missed it in 2020 because of the pandemic, you know, right?
Yeah, that's true.
But when PS4 came out and the Xbox One, I mean, people were lined up, you know, even the Switch. Yeah. A lot of people were excited for that. Switch too, just recently, a couple months ago, people went to the store to get the Switch at midnight. You know, like seeing those clips, videos, pictures of people at the stores waiting for the hardware to come out. That was pretty cool too.
It is cool. And taking it kind of a step back to, again, like what started this conversation, the digital showcases themselves. It is interesting because they did sort of come up over time. We've seen many iterations of them. As you mentioned, the Nintendo Direct are really like the sort of beginning of this, and other companies followed suit, still had live presentations, still do have live presences at in-person events throughout the year, but some have retained their own, such as like the Xbox Fan Fest of past years, or RT... Or is RTS or
RTX?
For Sony? RTX.
No, wait, for Sony.
RTX was Rooster Teeth.
That's Rooster Teeth. Yeah.
Sony had, like, what I'm saying is there was a period of time where people had their own events and digital showcases. Now we're seeing those IRL events kind of falling aside, and just the digital showcases seem to remain. And the reason must be because they work, right? As you said, Danny, it reaches more people, it's cheaper, more economical. Companies are spending less and less on marketing, or at least concentrating their dollars a little bit more away from IRL experiences and more towards digital. Some of that is turning back around, as we said, and when it does, it's really special, and it's so exciting to show support for it so we can get more of it in the future. But where we are now, what these showcases really do for companies is what it used to do for their investors. And it's important to keep that in the back of your mind as a consumer as you're watching these showcases, because originally E3, the Electronic Entertainment Expo, was for investors and partners. It was not for the general public. It was not for the gamers. And it was every company's opportunity to say, hey, here's all the stuff we got coming up. This is why you should work with us. And there is still a spirit of that carried through to these digital showcases that I've noticed, that is a little bit more present if you pick it apart, right? And on the surface, it's very, very easy to get excited about the games you see. That's obviously one of the major goals. But there's also some other stuff kind of going on in the background where you see, especially in like the Xbox and Sony shows, they're showing a little bit of their partnership flex, right? They're saying like, hey, this is exclusive. This is coming to our platform first. Our logo is the biggest one on the end title screen. We have the exclusive interviews with the developers for this. And when you see that messaging, when you see like coming first to blank, or, you know, play it early here, or, you know, best on this platform, remember that that messaging is maybe not necessarily for you as a consumer. It's to communicate that confidence and that strength of partnership to their other partners and stakeholders. And I know that there's a lot of feedback that comes after these shows where they say, why do they have all this marketing language? All this marketing stuff is about marketing. It's like, that part is not for you as a consumer. Maybe it is if it's like communicating how you play it. Like, it's available on PC and Xbox Game Pass, so you know that you can go play it on both, right? But there's a lot of that language that's truthfully to make sure that their partners know exactly how they're operating and that those deals are fulfilled and other things that are kind of going on behind the scenes. And that also kind of extends to how the shows even choose which games to show you, right? Like, there's some internal politics happening.
Oh, 100%.
Around each of these. Like, first-party development studios, like, you know, all the ones that Sony owns, all the ones that Xbox owns, they're competing against each other for that airtime, right? You know, they're trying to say, like, ours is ready. This is these assets are final or close to final, or we have a great narrative team. They can come off of the game and stop writing the game to write this trailer treatment. Like, that work takes people away from making the actual game. And so it's important to remember, not every team has a full animation studio separate to make their own trailer. So sometimes they bring in third-party partners to make those trailers. You know, you remember Blur from all of the amazing things that they've done. There's a lot of vendors who literally go into a game studio, take everything they're doing, and then make a trailer from it. And whoever has the ability to hand over those assets and communicate their story well usually comes out with a good video, a good piece. Sometimes they can't do that. Sometimes, you'll like you saw in the Xbox showcase, all they have is one really polished boss fight ready to show. And I'm not saying that that's what's happened in the studio. I don't know anything about their development work, but that was a good way to show off what they had, right? And so you have to kind of remember when you're going to criticize these shows that there's a lot that goes into how they get produced and what they're able to put in front of you and how they shape it and what they put around it. And it's not literally just, hey, consumers, get excited. There's a lot of different people they're communicating to with these showcases.
Yeah, 100%. Also, another thing that we have to mention, sometimes when we see a game that is just announced and is very, very early and it's going to be a long time that we're going to get to see another update, usually it's because, one, of course, get the gamers excited, you know, for that. But also, the developers, the studio needs more developers to come in to apply so they could also be excited to work on the project, you know. And, you know, at that time when, you know, the early days when I started seeing that for the first time, I didn't like that because as a gamer, I was like, oh, man, we got to wait for like 5-6 years, you know, whatever. But then once I start learning the behind the scenes, the reason why they do that is because the majority is because, look, this is a big project. We need a lot of people. Let's get people excited. And also, let's get developers also excited for them to apply, for them to work on this project. You know, so that's something that I think is also important to bring up, because a lot of gamers, they just think about the excitement and the announcement, but there's a lot more happening behind the scenes, you know. So, and there's 100%. Also investors.
I don't think I've ever met a single dev who wants to show their stuff before it's ready.
Like, yeah.
If they do it, it's for a really valid reason that they have weighed against all kinds of pros and cons. And I guess like the last thing before we close out, I just want to maybe get your thoughts on this, Danny, of what do you think the future of these showcases could be? Because obviously, you know, making a really polished video package and putting it out and maybe having some blog posts to support what people have seen and have more questions on is cool. But what is the future of this showcase format? Like, what else could they be doing that would make it more exciting for consumers or more exciting for partners or potential devs who want to then go work with these publishers in the future?
I think something that I love about the Nintendo Switch 2 event is, yes, they had a direct digitally, and of course they invited the media to get to be at the event early, right? And then the next day having the consumers, so they'll have creators and also consumers to attend and get some hands-on of all those games and also the actual console for the first time. I think we should see more of that in the future, because I think just relying on YouTube and streaming service and then that's it, right?
Yeah.
I think companies should do more than just that. But at the same time, that is not going to be that expensive. You know, I know you mentioned PlayStation. They had that, I can't remember. Was it PlayStation Experience, I think it was called?
Yeah, so that's what it was. It was PSX. That's why I was thinking RTX.
Yeah. That one is not cheap. So that's the reason why PlayStation was charging for people to attend this event, because it was not cheap at all. You know, but if there's a way where, you know, companies could have like hands-on events, I'm not saying multiple cities, but like the major cities, you know, Los Angeles, New York, I don't know, Miami and other places. I think having those hands-on in-person events, I think, is very important, because for me personally, I think you can't just rely on just a direct. Now, I'm not saying to do that every single time as a direct, but when there's like a big event, like for example, for Xbox, the Xbox Game Showcase during the summer, why not have something after that, but also in different locations for the consumers, not the media, because the media is going to be here for Summer Game Fest, but somewhere, something like that. I think that will be really, really cool to see in the future. PlayStation could do the same thing, Nintendo, but it's only those big moments, not just all the time throughout the year, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing better than putting the game in people's hands, right? And the sooner you can do that, or even if you're just showing them some of the dev interviews or the trailers, and they can talk to their friends about it right then and there, that really does open up a lot of that experience and makes it more memorable, you know? Because you remember where you were and how it felt when these amazing E3 presentation moments happen, good and bad, right?
Yeah,
like, we
yeah.
remember them. And all of these Nintendo Direct, State of Plays, and Xbox Showcases, they're great, but I don't remember a lot of them. You know what I mean? Like, they don't stay with you in the same way, and they don't really become part of your gaming history and in the way that they maybe did before as live events, or maybe the way they could in a hybrid model. So I'm excited to see that start to expand maybe a little bit more. You know, like I said before, Netflix has really found something special with the way they treated the K-pop Demon Hunter project. And it's become an international sensation. And if there's anything that I know, it's that the gaming audience is passionate. And I think that they have a lot more to give to help support this industry, support medium and smaller developers who get the opportunity to be a part of these showcases, as Xbox has showed a lot today in their partner preview. And, you know, that may be a way to help energize this industry that is maybe feeling a little bit dejected at the moment and losing their heart a bit. Like, there's a lot of really great talent that is bleeding out of the space. And, you know, that's a way to help connect to people again, which is really the heart of what gaming can do and what makes it so powerful. So
yep.
I'm looking forward to the future of it. I hope there's more fun experiments on the way.
Hey, look, I know a company is going to come up with something that other companies are going to start doing. That's what's going to happen. It always happens like that all
and
the time.
And it'll probably be Nintendo again.
Yeah, who knows? I just want to say to everybody, thank you for watching the show, streaming it on YouTube and other podcast platforms. It's been very helpful. Sorry that we've been super busy with stuff behind the scenes. But
yeah, the holidays are busy, of course, as you all know. But, you know, mm-hmm. I'm focusing on getting healthy. We're focusing on holiday time with their family, but we're really excited about what we're doing with DNR, both behind the scenes and in front of the camera here. And we're still working on a live episode, so stay tuned on details of how to participate with that.
Yeah, we want to do that very, very soon. We'll see. We'll let you guys know once we have like
before
an official
date.
Before
the year is out, we're going to get a live ep in.
Yeah, before we go to our trip to Dominican Republic.
Before we leave the country, we'll do a live episode.
Yeah. No, everyone, thank you for watching. And stay tuned for more The Danny Rani Show. We're out. Take care. Bye.
All right, remember, the machine knows if you're lying. First statement, Carvana will give you a real offer on your car all online.
False.
True, actually. You can sell your car in minutes.
False? That's gotta be...
True again. Carvana will pick up your car from your door, or you can drop it off at one of their car vending machines.
Sounds too good to be true, so true.
Finally caught on. Nice job. Honesty isn't just their policy, it's their entire model. Sell your car today, too.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.